Tata an opening the sutra. The Dharma incomparably profound and infinitely subtle is rarely encountered even in millions of ages. Now we see it, hear it, receive and maintain it. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning.
Good evening, all you hordes of people out there. This is the last in my Dizong series. This is case 20 from the Book of Serenity, Dizong's Nearness. Dizong asked Fayan, "Where are you going?" Fayan said, "Around on pilgrimage." Dizong said, "What is the purpose of your pilgrimage?" Fayan said, "I don't know." Dizong said, "Not knowing is nearest." This is the same Dizong who, in the last talk I gave, asked his dumbfounded student, "What do you call the world?" In this koan, he's talking with Fayan, who will eventually become a teacher in his lineage. And Fayan is, there are many, many koans about Fayan. And like many koans, this is an enlightenment story. We are told in the commentary on this koan, on hearing this, Fayan was greatly enlightened. "What is the purpose of your pilgrimage?" "I don't know." "Not knowing is nearest." In Zen, as you know, great value is placed on not knowing. Students often come wanting to tell us how much they know, how much they have practiced, how many places they have studied, how many esoteric practices they have learned. Such students are nearly impossible to teach, at least at the beginning. We say they come with a full cup. Nothing can be poured into a full cup. We all do this at times, I think. We all want people to see how much we know, how much we have mastered. On one of the many skiing trips I took with my family when I was a kid, we were having supper at a nice restaurant. At the table next to us, there was a family with two small boys, maybe 6 and 7 years old. They were talking about their skiing adventures of the day. Shortly after the conversation began, one of the boys said, "Tonight, let's not talk about how great we are." We are all like those two little boys. We all want the world to know how great we really are, even if we're too shy or too insecure to talk about it. We all have mastered something and are proud of it. We want to be recognized for our accomplishments. We want to be valued. We want to matter. In some way, each one of us has a full cup. The trouble is, if we want to learn something, it doesn't work if we come to it with a full cup. If we come to it trying to prove how much we already know, we will have no room for new information. We are not open. As soon as we think we know something, we are no longer open. If we have an attitude of not knowing, we can be open. We can learn. When we can say, "I don't know," and mean it, we are open. The study of Zen is about letting go, letting go, letting go. Koan study is about disassembling our preconceived notions about how the world works, about who we are, about what is really real. As the great Zen master Dogen said, "To study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be authenticated by the myriad things. To be authenticated by the myriad things is to drop off the mind-body of oneself and others. Now that is not knowing. To drop off the mind-body of oneself and others. To let go of our own mind and body. What is so important about this not knowing is that we are open. When we don't know, we are open. When we know, we are closed to new information and new experience. To truly learn something new, we have to not know, to be open, to have an empty cup. Getting back to the koan, when asked what was the purpose of his pilgrimage, Phaon answered, "I don't know." Dizan praises him for this. He says not knowing is nearest. But notice he does not say not knowing is the answer. He said it is nearest. What does that mean, nearest? Nearest to what? There's another koan found in the Gateless Gate that unpacks this for us, and it is the story of the great master Chaozhou's enlightenment. It's case 19, Ordinary Mind is the Way. Chaozhou earnestly asked Nanchuan, "What is the way?" Nanchuan answered, "The ordinary mind is the way." Chaozhou asked, "Should I direct myself toward it or not?" Nanchuan said, "If you try to turn toward it, you go against it." Chaozhou said, "If I do not try to turn toward it, how can I know that it is the way?" Nanchuan answered, "The way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is a blank consciousness. When you have really reached the true way beyond all doubt, you will find it as vast and boundless as the great empty firmament. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong?" At these words, Chaozhou was suddenly enlightened. To really unpack this koan would be another whole talk, but I would like to look at it a little more closely. The way in the koan, of course, is the Tao, the great way, the rightness of all things, the true nature of all things, our own true nature. Nanchuan says that the way is beyond all knowing and not knowing, beyond all right or wrong, beyond all duality of any kind. It is as vast and open as the sky. The way is the source of our very being, our own true nature, and the true nature of all that is. The only way to realize it is to step out of all our dualities, to be in that vastness where there are no things, no pairs of opposites, no right, no wrong, that wordless place where there is only is, no speech or silence. There is only just this. Going back to Dizong and Phaon again, Phaon says he doesn't know the purpose of his pilgrimage. And Dizong says, not knowing is nearest. So what is this not knowing? Well, first, as I said ad infinitum, not knowing is being open. But not knowing is not the goal. It is the means. It gives us space, openness to new experiences, open to anything that might happen. Not knowing allows us the space to really see without filters, to really realize our oneness with all that is, to realize our own true nature, our own true selves, or, as we Buddhists would say, to realize our own Buddha nature. But that realization is not about either knowing or not knowing. It is about being. Being one with all that is. being one in that great wordlessness we struggle to describe. That wordlessness where we are transformed, where we can only stand in wonder, where we realize that words cannot convey the experience, where the only thing we can say is, ah, and stand in awed, reverent gratitude. Dizong asked Fayang, "Where are you going?" Fayang said, "Around on pilgrimage." Dizong said, "What is the purpose of your pilgrimage?" Fayang said, "I don't know." Dizong said, "Not knowing is nearest."
I've got a question.
Okay.
When we were at Greyston, Bernie used to ask Lou Nordstrom, who was the philosopher, scholar of the group, for study questions on his talks. And I have a study question on this talk. Mm. What is the difference, Kyle, between not knowing and ignorance?
You could tell that something's there. This will shatter the beautiful aura created by your talk, but what I'm thinking of is the introduction to the television show Get Smart.
Yeah, that's good.
There's door after door after door. He goes down that hallway, and the not knowing is, you say, okay, I don't know. You open that door, but there's still another level where, yeah, I really know. But then you get past that, and it's just opening to that not knowing, like you said, is door after door after door, and each one is like a bank vault door. It's like subtle ways that layers of internal knowing resistance.
You're not going to answer my question. I'll try to.
The thing that comes to mind, I recently heard a talk about the 12-fold chain, in which one of the things that struck me about in that talk was, it was Gil Frunzdahl who is at the Insight Meditation Center in San Francisco. And he parsed ignorance in terms of ignoring.
Well, what do you say?
Not attending.
But what do you say?
Well, that's what, if you ask what's the difference between not knowing and ignorance, I think there's a lot of answers to that. But I think one answer is that one way in which they're different is ignorance is not seeing, paying attention, whereas not knowing doesn't have that feeling of not being present. It has a wider, bigger feeling.
Anybody else?
I think of ignorance as being deluded, being separate from in all the ways that we are. And I think of the not knowing as being receptive.
I feel that ignorance is when you think that you don't know. Not knowing.
Thinking can be ignorance, keeping you away from, separating you from something. A lot of people know lots and lots of facts and figures and information, and very often they're the loudest in proclaiming what they know. And how to deal with that is a puzzle, because it's like a front, a barrier, a wall. It's like a wall. It's a puzzle how to deal with that and melt it away. But I think the not knowing that Margaret is talking about is being receptive to anything, not prejudging or pre-planning or anticipating. So I think they're quite different, actually.
I agree with you about openness. You can be ignorant and think you know all kinds of things. Often that's the case if you look at the right, for example, right now.
Or the left.
Or the left, yeah, it's true. And not knowing allows us to be open to all, you know, all the possibilities. I've been living with this event that happened, and I had my students write about it. Henry Louis Gates, the African-American scholar, was coming back from a trip to China, and he couldn't get into his house. He and his chauffeur tried to push at the door, and a woman went by and thought they were breaking into the house, and then called the cops, and the cops came, and they said to Gates, you know, step outside, and he said, why? Because I'm a black man. And then it escalated from there, and Obama jumped into it. First he was saying, first he was in the condition of not knowing. He was asked about it, and he said, well, I don't know. And then he fell into ignorance. And when he said, I think it was stupid. And all of my students have been lured into knowing, but they can't know. And I wanted them to be fair. And then I find myself knowing about this, but I don't really know it, and trying to be open to it. But, if Gates had seen the guy and said something to him, and he had dropped his prejudice about it, dropped his sense of what might have happened, the cop thinking he's a black guy and therefore he's breaking into his own house or whatever. If everybody had just dropped their knowingness, they would have understood each other much better, very, very much more quickly. It would not have taken a whole nation, national summit, beer summit, to figure out that the other person was actually a decent human being. And in some ways, that's what we're doing all the time.
So, ignorance is...
Ignorance, in this case, is... you're repressing the fact that you don't know. If somebody comes to you and you can drop your preconceptions, you can meet that person. But if you've got an idea who they are ahead of time, you're an ignorant person.
It almost sounds like in that case, almost like what you're saying is ignorance is thinking that you can know.
Well, Socrates is famous about this. Everybody knows, but only I am ignorant.
I think that... Peter and Margaret, do you want to speak to this?
Well, just to add that I think there's kind of not knowing, which in the sense that you've been talking about not holding certainty. Mm-hmm. And then the sort of profound not knowing, which is something even deeper, something, it's a kind of an opening to a boundlessness that we can't enter with our cognitive faculty, as it were. And maybe Deborah touched on that a little bit. So that's all that I would add. I think that different possibilities of not knowing.
I think when you hold on to something, you're ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And when you drop whatever it is, you don't know. So we study, we have to study, but we can't hold on to our studies. We can't hold on to our concepts. As soon as we hold on to them, we're ignorant. Because we think we know. As soon as you hold on to something. That's why Margaret was talking about the full cup. The cup could be full of the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. And if they're full of those teachings, how can you put anything else in them? So I think the key to not knowing is, as Margaret said in her talk, let go. Whatever it is, and ignorance is holding on to it. And when you hold on to something, you think you know. That's what you were talking about. You hold on to prejudices, you hold on to mores, you hold on to all sorts of things. I think that's the key for me. Holding, grasping.
One of the things we hold on to are words.
Mm-hmm. You have to let them go too.
Mm. Yeah.
But we have to use them knowing.
We have to use them.
Knowing.
Knowing that.
That they hold, that they grasp us, sure.
But we also know that they are our way to reach something else, so it's really difficult to let them go, because what you're looking for is something larger than the word.
Mm-hmm. Words are metaphors. Yes. All words are metaphors. Mm-hmm.
Well, some of us hold on too tightly to the words themselves and expect some return from that and forget that it is a metaphor.
Yeah, I think so.
Steph often says, it doesn't matter how often you say water, the word water will not quench your thirst. Mm. It's the experience of drinking the water. But that is a wordless experience that we attach words to. I think that's what you're saying in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's very good. Thank you.
Creations are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless, I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it.